When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Looking at a government shutdown in, less than a day? Do you think the Republicans are going to come up with anything? Do you think they're going to pull a rabbit out of their well? No. I have no idea how you're getting out of this because I'm still not sure why we're in it. There was a deal. There's no deal. Crazy Republicans want to hold the country hostage for why? Because they can. That seems to be what it is. And, you know, the party of chaos, the party of no really original ideas or thoughts or policy visions. This is what we get. So, surprise, we will see a couple million people go without paychecks. We will see pain and suffering and all because, well, I'm still not 100% sure. Because this is one of those things, if you're Kevin McCarthy, you can make a deal. There's got to be a handful of Republicans are going to go, this is a bad idea. Let's work something out with Democrats. Let's get something done. Put it before the floor. Get the 218 votes we need. Move it over to the Senate. Get it done. And get back to bickering over Joe Biden's tennis shoes. Get back to making things up and lying in impeachment. You know, get back to your core, your base. It's crazy, crazy times. Today, the UAW expanded its strike. Another 7,000 UAW members, auto workers, will find the picket line. And look, now they're targeting Ford and General Motors. While Jeep kind of got a pass, Stellantis is evidently making some progress. So we'll see. Hopefully this comes to an end and a reasonable deal, but you know you've got like over 25,000 auto workers on strike out of the 146,000, 150,000 members wherever they're at, and I like what Sean Fain has been saying. I like the words coming out of his mouth. Again, what we've been saying here on the program for years, it's not red hat, blue hat, it's not right left, it's up down. It's corporate greed, it's billionaire greed versus the rest of us. It's that 99% frame that we got during the Occupy Wall Street era. It's that. And while they keep moving us back to red hat, blue hat, they keep moving us back to it's Democrats versus Republicans. No, no. The color that matters is green. And they've been robbing us blind. And this is where Sean Fain, he's not the greatest speaker. He doesn't grab me, and you know, he's not the orator of our time, but the words are important. And he said, look, our union was essential in building what was called the arsenal of democracy. Just like 80 years ago, he said, today our union is building a different arsenal of democracy. But this war isn't against some foreign country. The front lines are right here at home. It's the war of the working class versus corporate greed. We are the new arsenal of democracy. The workers are the liberators, and our strike is the vehicle for liberation. He said, I want to be clear about one thing about the president's historic visit. The most powerful man in the world showed up for one reason and one reason only, because our solidarity is the most powerful force in the world. He said, we can stand together united in the cause of economic and social justice. When we do, when we stand together, there is nothing we cannot do. And that's the right language. That's the right call to action. It's not red hat, blue hat. It's, hey, we want better opportunities for ourselves, for our kids, for our families. We want good wage jobs. We want job security. We want to make sure that the next generation of jobs are good jobs. We're fighting the robotics, the AI, all of the forces that are coming. There's only one group out there taking this stuff on, and it's the labor movement. And I want them to be more like this. This is the language the labor movement should be grabbing on in every corner. This is a which side are you on moment. He said, you know, we're fed up with corporate greed. We're fed up with corporate excess. We are fed up with breaking our bodies for companies that take more and more and give less and less. He said, our anger is righteous. Our struggle is just. That, again, the language that all trade unionists, all working people should be gathering around. This is a moment for labor to educate its members like never before. This is a moment for, because get this, you know, I was thinking about this today. Trump went to a non-union facility in Michigan where you're going to love this. The guy who owned the place, there's a picture of him with his kid, probably, you know, 4 or 5 years old, up on his shoulders. I've got the exact same picture of my children up on my shoulder holding signs or doing whatever. But he's got his kid up on his shoulders holding a sign that says UAW member. And now, again, this is the owner of the company. A non-union company. So for me, that image should be, UAW, if you're listening, your first exhibit in organizing his workers. Because I'll bet you those workers would like better wages, hours, conditions. I'll bet you they'd like to get a little bit more in their paycheck. They'd like their labor to be respected a little bit more. I'll bet you. But it got me thinking that, you know, when you have this moment, you had, you know, Biden going to the picket line, and you had Trump doing his fraud rally with no, I don't think there were any actual UAW members there, because had there been one, they would have trotted them out and, you know, and walked them around. And look, I know a lot of UAW members voted for him because they bought into he's going to save the Lordstown plant. In fact, we met some folks from Lordstown when we did our Working Class Heroes tour who said, look, you know, I'm still mad at him because he told us not to move. He said he was going to save that plant. Don't go anywhere. Don't sell your house. You know, stay. We're going to save these. And he didn't. The Lordstown lie. So am I surprised that there were no UAW members there? Not really. Because the ones that did vote for him, they internalized what he was saying. They were going to make the UAW great again. He was going to make auto manufacturing great again. And what did he do? Nothing. And it got me thinking that there's really no good reason for any union worker to vote for Donald Trump. There's not. There's no reason whatsoever. If you're thinking about your economics, if you're thinking about putting food on the table, keeping a roof over your head, you know, ensuring that your kids have health care, if that's where your thinking is, I don't know how any right-minded person could go, yep, Trump's my guy. In fact, I don't know that there's a good reason for any working person to vote for Trump, especially knowing that because of his tax scheme, because of his only legislative accomplishment, the billionaire class in this country got 77% wealthier. And I was going through that number, 77% wealthier, a couple of trillion dollars in wealth being accumulated by the handful at the top. And you go, you know that inflation thing the Republicans have been pointing at Joe Biden about? I don't know. Could that have a little, just something to do with it? The fact that they, it was a good opportunity to raise prices and put a little coin in their pocket. And the answer is, yeah, it's what they do. But this is one of these moments. And I'm looking at it from, having studied labor history and going back in those times, wondering if the people who were fighting the fights at that era knew that history was in the making. The sit-down strikes of the 30s, the Teamsters in 34 in Minneapolis, did they know that they were changing the course of history? And I think, if this goes the way that I hope it does, and I think it will, this could be one of those opportunities for our grandchildren to look back and go, this was a turning point. This was the first time in economic history that the working class didn't get totally screwed by technological advancements. And I had a conversation today with somebody who, very angry guy, about my age. And, he basically laid out what I've been saying from the beginning. The reason people like Trump is he hates the same people they do. He's singing the lines that we were told in the 80s that we were gonna all do better. Our birthright was solid middle class. We didn't have to do any of those dirty jobs anymore. We were gonna all have corner offices and wear white shirts and ties, and it was gonna be great. Technology was gonna be our friend. And the reality is it's not working out like that. The reality is everyone feels like they're under attack. And this guy said, look, I feel like from every angle, we're being attacked, our way of life. And, when I tried to break it down and going, well, what exactly are you talking about in your life? How has your life changed? Well, it hasn't, but everyone else. And it comes back to, and it's the weirdest things. It comes back to this belief that out there somewhere is all of this incredible change that's going to, force them into who knows what. But they see Trump as the guy who's stuck in the old mentality. He's not going to change. And I got to tell you, I don't know that that's a great thing. I don't. So I look at this opportunity right now to say, hey, you've got a Republican Party that's lost in the woods. They don't even know what they're doing. They can't even play nice in their own sandbox, let alone anyone else's. This is an opportunity for Democrats, for working people, to step forward and say, you know what? It's time for us to make some serious changes. Some serious changes electorally. And this is an opportunity for voters to go to the polls and wipe away all of this insanity. Get rid of Trump, get rid of the Republicans in the House, get rid of the crazy, rid ourselves of the insanity. There was a woman back in the 90s, Susan Powder, I think her name was, she was, stop the insanity was her plea. Yeah, it's time. It's time for us to stop the insanity. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people.
Talk. We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Donald Trump was in California today, and the speech he gave, there's so much there. I used the MF word, and I think that was written in. I don't think he winged it. I think that was written in, but he... there's all this talk about Joe Biden not being, Sleepy Joe and, all this stuff and not being a great speaker. And he's not. He's not a great orator. He is someone who's been doing some really good policy stuff and doing some really good work. But, he's not Obama. He's not Clinton. He's not. And he's never going to be. But, Trump gets a pass. And a lot of times, I've watched a lot of his speeches, most of them, unfortunately, and he rambles in these weird, bizarre ways. And well, one of them was evidently he was going on about water. Here it is.
But they don't want the water to come down all the way to Los Angeles and the Central Valley, where we're constantly forced to ration. You have droughts. We're rich people in Beverly Hills. We don't feel so sorry for them, but I do actually. They pay millions of dollars in taxes. They take you to shower. They're told to hurry up. You're only allowed a small amount of water when they take a shower. That's why rich people from Beverly Hills, generally speaking, don't smell so good, Typically. You ever notice? They're not great. Their hygiene is not good, but it's forced to be that way. So when you meet somebody with a beautiful house in Beverly Hills, you know that person is sort of disgusting under there.
Yeah, that was his thing. And now I'm trying to figure out how is there a leprechaun in the shower keeping track with a stopwatch? I mean, is Joe Biden, got nothing else to do? Is he standing outside the shower door? I don't know. But this, again, is another one of those things. It's like the light bulbs. It's like the stoves. It's you name it. They make something up. They grab a hold of it. And then they make, bizarre narratives. And this is one of those really bizarre things. And it shows get ready for it, because, they're rationing water. They're coming for your water. You know this is coming. The right-wing spin machine is going to do this. All the while, they're doing all of these kind of crazy stuff. I mean, I look at Wisconsin. Wisconsin had a 16-year-old kid get killed recently in a job he should not have been doing. Now you have Republicans who have introduced a piece of legislation that would eliminate work permits for 14 and 15-year-olds a la Arkansas. Now, remember, the kid died 16-year-old in a sawmill. Now we're not even going to keep track of where these kids work. And, the people who are pushing this say, this is just a needless administrative barrier. It slows down the hiring process. Really? My kids got work permits. I don't remember it slowing anything down. I remember having to fill out a form. I remember signing it saying, yeah, I'm okay with this. I remember, you know, talking about what the rules were and all that. Yeah, I think it's great. Well, as we say all the time, our Republican friends seem to want to repeal the 20th century, and child labor seems to be front and center of this. And understand, we know who they're going after. For instance, you know, we've been talking about the meatpacking industry. As one analyst said, without child labor, without immigrant child labor, the meatpacking industry doesn't stand on its own. And all they would have to do is pay a little bit more. But that would eat into the profits. And can't have that because we've allowed basically the production of our food supply to be monopolized by a handful of companies with a handful of profiteers who are wildly profitable. And again, the distraction of what we get from people like Trump. And look, I watched his speech from Michigan. Oh, it was painful. There are very few of them that are really painful. That one was. You know, it's everybody on the other side is out to destroy you. They're out there. They're the worst human beings possible. That's their mantra. That's what they push. And they push this narrative of hatred. And they do it well. Understand, you know, they do amazing job of pushing, as George W. Bush would have said, catapulting the propaganda. Whereas I don't think the left does that. Well, again, you have extremists on every side, but I think, you know, right now the Republican Party as a whole has gone way right. Whereas mainstream Democrats are like, hey, you know what? We got to get stuff done. Now, I was thinking about the shutdown that is coming, and I'm about 99% sure that this is going to happen. And I have no idea how it ends. I don't even really know what the actual demands are, where the field of demands are. It's like any negotiation, you generally have parameters, you know where the goalposts are, and then you get to narrow that down. I'm not even sure. You know, I read, you know, Scott Perry's letter, and it's like, okay, that sounds like an internal fight that you can't figure out. If you get your own house in order, if you're going to lead. Maybe figure out what your game plan is. And if you're going to oust your leader, oust them. But don't keep playing this bizarre kind of back and forth game that, oh, we're going to oust him, we're going to leave. We're going to do the childish thing and leave the proposal in the bathroom for some reporter to find. I mean, it's like a bad episode of any horrible reality TV show. Only this is real people's lives. These are real people's jobs. These are their careers. These are their futures. And they're playing with this like, again, it's some kind of reality TV show. And I come back to, why would we elect people who don't believe in government? It's like, you know, hiring a bus driver who doesn't believe, you know, wheels should be round. You know, it's like, you know, wanting to hire an airline pilot who doesn't like to land. This is what we've done. We have put people into power who hate government. And it goes back to the anger that a lot of people my age, especially white, you know, middle-aged males, we've been trained like Pavlovian dogs to hate government and, you know, to hate everybody. You know, it's all their fault. Because that's the comment I heard most today. Well, it's all their fault. No, it's not all their fault. It's not both sides. There's no both sidesism here. There's one party in control. And it's not the Senate. It's not Biden. I heard that today. Well, why doesn't Biden do anything? Because Biden can't do anything. You know, there's this thing called the Constitution. You may have seen it, may have tripped over it. Someone may have slapped you with a book that you didn't bother to open. But in that thing, it says that all of this stuff has to emanate from the House. So all of this spending has to emanate from the House. There's no other path. Now, the Senate could do their homework and say, here, we've done your homework for you. Pass this. They could do that. They could say, hey, this is something that we would be okay with, but they can't fix this. You can't fix stupid. You have to get rid of them. You have to throw them out, throw the bums out, because even they don't know. You know, why doesn't Joe Biden do something? Joe Biden can't do anything. There's no way to sign an executive order saying, hey, you know, we're gonna fund the government. He can't do that. Doesn't have the power. And this is where, again, again, the people who tell me that we should have a citizen, you should have to take a citizenship test to vote. These are the people lecturing me on how we should be funding our government. Now, I understand some people don't want it. Some people want to see chaos. Some people want to see suffering and struggle until it hits them, until it hits their doorstep. And then, oh, can't have that. But I have no idea how this ends. I want to hear your thoughts. If you got a thought, I want to hear it. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. On the other side, I'm going to get an expert's view on this. Back after this.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Again, I have no idea why this shutdown is happening, but I do know one thing. I do know that Republicans want Granny to go hungry. They literally, I don't know what kind of evil monster thought it's a good idea. Let's cut money for Meals on Wheels. Yeah, that's a great idea, you twits. And this is, again, I don't know what kind of monster would think this up, but I remember during the Bush years, every budget that Bush came out with, there was a really small line item that would give seniors like a bag of groceries, like produce. And I forget the name of it off the top of my head. It was a very small thing, but every budget, they tried to pull that out of there. And Bernie Sanders fought to keep it in there because, you know, we want to feed, you know, Granny. We want to keep Granny around. Granny's important. Very strange times. But here to share some thoughts on where we are, why we're here, and maybe how we get out of this mess, I've asked Bobby Kogan to talk with us. Bobby is Senior Director of Federal Budget Policy there at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, the website. Bobby, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, thanks so much for having me on.
So let's start with the big question. Why? Why is this happening? Why are we doing this?
Yeah, the short version is that some House Republicans are using this as a tactic to try to get extreme cuts. Basically, this all harkens back to the debt limit issue, which was a couple months ago. We came out of that with a bipartisan agreement on what level we were going to fund the government at. And I'm not even kidding. Within a week, House Republican leadership said, nah, we're not going to stick to this deal that we spearheaded. And so they went to writing bills that were significantly below the deal with really deep cuts. So like 80% cut to like our major education grant to help like poor school districts, 59% cut to the program that kind of helps make sure that all of our drinking water is safe, right? So super huge cuts, really important things. And that obviously wasn't going to happen. And so now this is a tactic that they're using to try to, they say, hey, give us some of what we want or we'll force a government shutdown. And the really weird thing is that they're kind of like out by themselves here. House Democrats, Senate Republicans, the White House, they're all happy and ready to stick to the deal that they all agreed to. Right. The issue is that some House Republicans want to do, you know, crazy cuts.
See, but here's the weird thing to me, Bobby. You know, in a functional democracy, in a functional government, in a functional system, the crazies would be, well, put off on an island and everybody else would be going a different way. How come we're not, you know, pushing the crazies into the corner and going off in a different way? There's a deal. Everyone agreed to it. And now it's not because of a handful of lunatics.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally right. You know, the really interesting thing is if you put the deal that people actually agreed to on the House floor, it would easily pass. But Speaker McCarthy might lose his job over it, right? If it goes through, it passes with Democrats and a bunch of Republicans supporting it, he could still be kicked out of his job. And so the difficulty here is for him to try to find something where he keeps his job and also we don't shut down.
But here's the thing. And this, again, this is not profiles in courage. You know, in a functional system, the Democrats would go, no, we're not going to let the crazies throw this guy out, that he would be able to keep his job. And again, you put the lunatics, the Scott Perrys, the Matt Gaetz, you know, that crowd, you put them on an island and you leave them there.
Right. So actually, folks, there's starting to be some talk of that. There are articles written, you know, yesterday, the day before, where folks were floating what House Democrats might demand in exchange for helping Speaker McCarthy keep his job or someone else. Remains to be seen. Oh, I'm sorry, go on.
No, I mean, you cut out for a second, so I was jumping in. I mean, if McCarthy gets ousted, there's only going to be another horrible person in that spot. So might as well keep the devil you know instead of going after another one. At least if I'm a Democrat in the House, that's the way I'm thinking.
Yeah, I mean, we'll just have to see what happens. I think that if it comes down to that, I think that they'll demand some power sharing sorts of things. We actually haven't seen anything like this in my lifetime. I don't know how far back you have to go to see kind of such a slim majority where the speaker has no control. As you remember, it took him 15 votes to get there, and he had to make tons of concessions, and that's part of why we're stuck here. And now part of that concession has led to us being stuck between one extreme option and another extreme option. One extreme option is cuts that hurt the American people, and another extreme option is a shutdown that hurts the American people.
Do you want to die quickly or slowly?
Quickly, always. Quickly, always. Slowly is tough.
No, I mean, this is basically the question. Firing squad or hanging? I mean, this seems to be our option in this moment, because what the Republicans are putting out, no Democrat can stand for, and I wouldn't stand for. The kind of draconian, massive cuts that they're demanding are unrealistic. And I got to tell you, there's a part of me, and this is the part of me that goes, you know, I would love them to have the world that they envision, that they want, just so that you could see the pain and suffering that they would cause. The problem is, there would be all the pain and suffering.
Yeah, that's right. You know, Kansas actually tried the experiment of doing huge tax cuts that they insisted would pay for themselves. And then it backfired so tremendously that you got some of the most diehard believers saying, well, it turns out we were wrong. And they went and they raised taxes afterwards. But as you say, the difficulty is all the harm that comes along the way. And if we do shut down, we'll see a lot of harm, right? So some things will continue if we do shut down, right? Medicare, Social Security continues, and anything kind of quote unquote necessary to protect life and property will continue. So the FDA would continue checking a lot of our food, but a lot of things don't continue. And what is considered necessary for life and property is up to interpretation by the individual agency. So the EPA does a lot of water inspection, and it's going to stop its routine water inspection. Chemical facilities, hazardous waste sites, right? If you see raw sewage in the water, they'll come and check that out. But it's the sort of thing where things start off pretty bad. Some Head Start centers are going to close. Kids will lose their preschool. NIH has these clinical centers where it takes in sick people who have difficult to treat diseases, and they'll keep their existing patients going, but they probably won't be taking in any new patients if 2013 is a guide there. And so these sorts of things happen immediately, and the longer it goes on, the worse and worse it gets. We have this program called WIC, which helps pregnant moms, and it helps newborns and infants afford healthy food. And it has a contingency fund that's allowed to draw down. It has a week, two, three, maybe four in it. But after that, roughly 7 million people will suddenly be without food, right? Like, this is really, really tough stuff.
Well, I mean, this sounds like a win for Republicans. It sounds like what they want. I mean, and I'm not being snide here. I mean, this is what they preach. I mean, this is the kind of stuff. These are people who don't believe in government. They run on a platform that they don't believe in government, that government shouldn't do anything. And now they're showing us that, well, they don't want it. They certainly don't want them to do anything.
Yeah, I hope that we don't go down that path. In the Trump shutdown of 2018 to 2019, right, lasted 35 days, we were 1 week away. We were literally 7 days away from losing SSI, Supplemental Security Income, which helps folks with disabilities, you know, get by. We were 1 week away from missing those February 1st payments. And that would have been a disaster. It serves over 60, I think it's over 70 million, but at least over 60 million people. And there would have just been tremendous human suffering.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Bobby Kogan. Bobby's a senior director of federal budget policy at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, the website, if you want to take a look at the work that they do there. You know, I got to tell you, I keep coming back to this, this belief that Trump is behind a lot of this stuff. And someone brought up to me today, and I got to ask you, because how much of this affects the federal courts? He's and I know this sounds way out of left field, but there's a part of me that goes, you know, I put nothing past Trump and his loyalists to go, no, we're just going to shut down the hearings. There'll be nothing because we're going to shut it down. Does this go?
Some civil litigation stops. All criminal investigation continues.
All right. So,
his stuff will continue because it is criminal. That said, the judges involved might not be paid. That they have some money from fees that they collect, so they might be paid for a bit. But a prolonged shutdown would have the judges unhappy for not being paid. But the criminal investigations will continue.
So let me ask you the other side of this, because you know. Since Biden took office, Republicans have been talking about recession, almost fetishizing recession because it's coming. It's always coming. Inflation, all of this stuff to try and make us believe the economy's horrible so that it's all bad for Biden. How much of this do you think plays into any of that? I mean, I know ideologically they want hungry children. They want kids back in the factories and in the slaughterhouses. I get that they want to kick poor people when they're down. But how much of this is about let's make the economy as bad as we can, because this is going to cost us billions of dollars. It's going to harm the economy in ways that if it's prolonged, that could possibly, and you're the expert, could it possibly, spark a recession?
A long enough shutdown would be tremendously painful for the economy. Goldman Sachs estimates it's about 0.2% of GDP per week. Right. So we're losing 20-ish billion dollars per week that it goes on. But this sort of grows, right? Because as I said, some programs can limp by, but eventually they end. And, let's say I'm a federal worker. If I know that I'm only going to miss one paycheck, I might spend like normal. But if I don't know when my next paycheck is coming and I miss more and more, I'm going to severely pull back my spending. It's pretty easy to see how that sort of builds into something pretty bad. So. I would say that the economy is in a pretty okay place right now. Obviously, there's a lot more progress to be made. But yeah, a prolonged recession would absolutely be bad for the economy.
John sent me an email here during this while we're talking. He asked if Congress gets paid during the shutdown. So do the Republicans who are causing this, does their paycheck come?
Yeah. So this is going to sound unbelievable, but the members of Congress get paid. The staff do not get paid, but they get paid back when it's all over. But a lot of the like janitorial contractors not only don't get paid, but they never get paid back. Right. So it gets worse and worse. The lower down the totem pole you go, the scarier it is for many folks. Many of the contractors will never get paid back. And it's some of the most vulnerable folks are the real losers in all of this.
Again, kicking someone while they're down. Now, our military, because I've been asked about this as well. Do the people in the military get paid while this is going on? Is this something that they have to work without paychecks and then they'll be made whole down the road? How does that work?
Yeah, so right now we are set to have the military not be paid. In 2018 to 2019, they were paid because that was only a partial shutdown and the defense bill had already been funded. And in the 2013 shutdown, a day before the shutdown, they passed a special provision to make it so the military got paid, but no one else. But right now that hasn't been passed. So if everything continues the way it is, then the military will not, just like everyone else, the military won't be paid. They will be paid back later, but they won't be paid during it. Though there's one exception, which is that there's one weird thing, which is that we're in the middle of a pay period right now. And so folks who have worked they'll work this week and they'll work next week, but they won't get paid for next week. So when they get their paycheck 10-ish days from now, they'll get a half paycheck because they'll get a paycheck for the first week, but not the second week. But then after that, they just won't get any more paychecks until we start back up again.
Jeez. I mean, this is I got to tell you, this is no way to run a lemonade stand. Let alone the most powerful country in the history of civilization. No, does any other country do this? Anybody else do this kind of insanity? Anyone, no. Botswana or, some place that I've never heard of and I can't find on a map? Anyone?
No, most countries, if you can't pass a budget, they dissolve parliament and they just hold a new election, right? Because they say, obviously, passing a budget is fundamental to the government. We are unique here where we, I don't want to say habitually, but every four-ish years, five-ish years, we end up with something. There were three in 2018, which was really bad. But yeah, we're pretty unique here.
So what do you think the chances are of it actually happening? Is there an 11th hour ticking bomb kind of, you know, 24 scenario? We're going to avert the crisis in the last hour? Because I'm not seeing it yet, but you're the expert here. Is there a way that, you know, they can pull the rabbit out of the hat, or, you know, another orifice? I don't know. Is it possible?
It is possible. I would say we are much more likely than not to shut down. We've moved in the wrong direction. The way for us to get out is for a whole bunch of people who said, I would never accept that, to change their mind, which can happen. But on the one side, we have the CR, the continuing resolution that keeps the government running. On the Senate side is being stalled by Senator Paul. And on the House side, they say, well, we won't accept that anyway unless you take out all money for Ukraine, and then we might accept it. We'll see. But so far, when Speaker McCarthy has said, oh, yeah, we could pass that, he has been wrong 100% of the time. So it's just really tough to say what – it's possible, but it's tough to see – it's tough to figure out exactly what would make it happen.
I don't know, man. I don't know how we get out of this. Honestly, I don't – once it starts, you know, how do we get out of this? Because I fear it only gets worse – because it's just this is turned into just a bad reality TV show. And I think what our representatives have learned is that the people who cause the most chaos and are the most obnoxious get the most attention on reality TV. And this is what we've done with, you know, Nitwits of DC episode 5. And I think this is where we are.
Yeah. I hope it's a short. I hope that we don't shut down. I hope if we do shut down, it's a really short shutdown. Normally you need something that is breaking for the shutdown to end. Not always, but typically it takes something that's going to break. So in the last shutdown, the TSA were about to en masse, like take their vacation. They weren't being paid anyway. And then the entire airport system would have shut down. So then they opened back up the government. So we have to see what would break for us to really open. There is a special path called a discharge petition, but, you know, that hasn't happened in decades, so we'll see.
So with that in mind, I mean, and this is kind of the last line of questioning, because I was going to ask you, what can we do? With that in mind, I mean, is that the way forward? Is that what eventually has to happen, that we basically end up with a general strike or something where federal employees go, screw you, if we're not getting paid, we're not coming in, and then shut everything down and force something? That is that inevitably how we get out of this, you think?
Yeah, it's possible. It's because something breaks. It's possible that, people always say, oh, well, this is the time a discharge petition is going to happen, and it never does. This might be the time, because you only need like 4 or 5 House Republicans to say, OK, I'll sign on. And then the other path is, you know, maybe the speaker loses his speakership, and then that's the path out. It's really tough to say. I just know that a lot of people could be hurt in the meantime.
So since you bring that up, since, you know, let's say he does lose his job, who do they put in that's going to be able to wrangle enough votes to get something over to the Senate, and the Senate's going to accept?
Yeah, this is an unfortunate situation. Yeah. That it's really tough to predict, and a lot of people are going to get hurt.
Sad, sad stuff. But Bobby, I appreciate you taking time for us, sharing your expertise. I sure hope that they pull a rabbit out of somewhere, and that we don't do this because it's stupid. But I fear we're headed on this path. But I appreciate the time.
Rick, thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks so much, Bobby Kogan. He is the chief cook and bottle washer, the senior director of federal budget policy at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, the website. Want to hear your thoughts right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come on, talk.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1789. That was the day that the United States Congress officially created the United States Army. Not everyone agreed that the U.S. should have a standing army. 2 years earlier, at the meeting that drafted the U.S. Constitution, James Madison warned against a permanent federal army. He told those at the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia, quote, "A standing military force with an overgrown executive will not long be safe companions to liberty." Since Madison was a strong proponent of a centralized federal government, his caution about the army was noteworthy. Perhaps these warnings is why it took Congress until the last day of their session to finally approve the measure. In fact, President George Washington had to write Congress not once, but twice to get them to act on the issue. Once it was approved, the first standing army had about 800 members. By comparison, in 2015, the army had just under 500,000 active duty soldiers. To supplement the small army, Congress also made a provision for the president to call up troops from state militias. The stated purpose for such call-ups was, quote, "protecting the inhabitants of the frontiers of the United States from hostile incursions of the Indians." While in federal service, the state militias were supposed to receive, quote, "the same as the pay and substance as the regular army." One time, various state militias were used for the forced removal of the Cherokee people from the southeast on the Trail of Tears in the 1830s. State militias were also deployed to break up labor strikes, such is the case in the Homestead Strike in Pennsylvania in 1892. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know what's amazing to me? Again, you look at the draconian cuts that they're talking about, the SNAP benefits and the WIC and I think the Meals on Wheels thing is probably the cruelest. And I get it. I've been saying for a while, the cruelty is the point. That's their trademark. But these are the people who tell us how religious they are. These are the Christians. And you know, I'm in this moment right now, where you know these extreme religious folks, I don't know. I think we should be voting them out. I don't know why we would elect anyone who runs on, "Oh, look how Christian I am." Especially when you look at the fact that 39% of adults in this country think that we're living in the end times. 49% of Christians believe that right now we're in the middle of the end times, that there's no future, that any day now it's over. And it's weird when you start thinking about it in terms of, I guarantee we've got people in our Congress who don't believe there's a future for our children, who believe that this is it. You know, I saw a thing on Facebook, you know, Jesus is coming on, and they gave a date and a time. I'm going, not sure where you got that from. Not sure where we pulled that out of. But evidently he's either back or, you know, making the trip, or, you know, he was supposed to show up, you know, maybe at, you know, Dealey Plaza with JFK Jr. I don't know. Or maybe he got here and turned around and go, "Didn't work out well for me last time. I'm not sticking around." I don't know. But why would we elect these people who clearly don't know the words, you know, feed the hungry, take care of the elderly, heal the sick, you know, that kind of stuff? Because you look at this budget, it's the antithesis of anything that a Christian would support. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it really is. When you get down to the base of it. And I was thinking about this today because I ran into a very, very angry Christian guy, very militant. And look, I always believed religion was, I still do to my core, that your faith is what makes you a better person, to at least want to be a better person, at least want to be more generous and more open and, you know, more caring. Instead of just mean and angry and vengeful. Yeah, I seem to remember from my teachings in Catholic school that those were bad things. And yet we've made this weird turn, especially in our politics. And it got me thinking today about, you know, putting people into power who don't believe there's a future. So, yeah, of course we're not going to address climate change. Why would we? You know, there's going to be no future. This is the end times. You know, why would we want to have an education system that's going to educate the next generation? There's no future for them. And this is where the silent majority has to wake up to the reality that we've kind of gone off the rails and that we need to get back to the bread and butter economic issues. We need to get back to the bread and butter neighborhood issues, the community stuff, the solidarity stuff, the stuff that Sean Fain was talking about. Because ultimately, and this is masterful. Ultimately, what happens while we're fighting these bizarre, crazy battles, we're getting robbed blind. You know, I was talking to this person today, and I'm like, why are you so angry? And basically, what it comes down to is life didn't turn out the way it was supposed to. Our birthright was prosperity. Our birthright was opportunity. Our birthright was to be at the top of the food chain. And life has been a struggle for a lot of people. And, you know, look, you know, I talk about myself. You know, 30 years ago, I had a higher standard of living because the job I had back then in economic terms paid much better wages, had much better benefits. I had more disposable income 30 years ago because the job I did and still do was compensated at a higher rate. And, you know, 30 years of stagnation and actual decline has been difficult, especially for people who believed that it was their birthright for their kids to do better. It was their birthright to have the opportunity. And what's happened is the wealth class of this country has just robbed it away, either through inflation or technology that, you know, they've pocketed. And right now, we're fighting that fight. But the rest of us got to come along. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your podcast, you'll find ours.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you know how our Republican friends in Congress love to attack the IRS because Joe Biden's hiring 87,000 IRS agents in here. They're coming to kick down your door. I saw a report today that nearly 1,000 tax filers who make more than $1 million a year still haven't filed their taxes for the period 2017 through 2020. Now they've got extensions and they've got, you know, legal people to help, you know, push that off down the road so that they don't have to pay. I mean, that's kind of what it is. I got to wonder, you know, with a shutdown, you know, how much more difficult does it get for the IRS to go after these folks and go, hey, deadbeats, pay your tax bill like every working person has to. Well, here to answer that question and, well, some of our other tax questions, I asked our good friend Matthew Gardner to come talk with us. Matthew's a senior fellow at the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. ITEP.org is their website. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. Matthew, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm sure you saw this story as well, that you've got these 1,000 people who are very wealthy, $1 million a year, still not filed their tax returns. I got to assume that's going to get worse if we have a shutdown.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The thing we know from years and years of data, and this latest IRS release is only the latest indicator of this, is that the single biggest consequence of the IRS underfunding we've seen for the past decade, the last 20 years, is that the very wealthy individuals, the big corporations, have been emboldened to try all sorts of things, ranging from claiming dubious tax breaks to filing late to, as it turns out, not filing at all, because they know there's an increased chance they can get away with it. So, yeah, and the tragedy of it, of course, is that we are right now, thanks to the legislation passed in the last year by President Biden, on our track to funding the IRS adequately for the first time in all this time, for the first time in the 21st century. And that would absolutely be one of the victims, certainly not the main victim, but an important victim of any government shutdown.
You know, here's the thing. And you were talking about not filing a tax return. And I'm going, you know, if a working person, you know, somebody who shows up to work and punches a clock every day and earns their wages, if they didn't file their tax return, boy, I'm sure the IRS would be there and, you know, with bells on coming to get them and, you know, cuffs and beautiful shiny bracelets, but someone making $1 million a year. Well, you know, that's a little more complicated.
Yeah. And that's an important thing to remember. The baseline level of enforcement that the IRS can do, even with its sharply reduced budget, is the kind that doesn't cost as much, which is making sure that low and middle income folks who have fairly straightforward income profiles, right? We have wages. That's what we have. That those guys are paying their taxes. Where it gets harder, but where it also becomes way more important fiscally, is auditing the very rich who have far more complicated income arrangements, and auditing big corporations. Either way, you know, the IRS can lose all the additional money it got in the Inflation Reduction Act. We're still going to see that baseline level of enforcement on low-income families because it's the cheapest thing to do.
Yeah.
It's the thing the IRS can do without adequate funding. But absolutely, the situation we're seeing right now where we have 1,000 people, millionaires, who literally cannot be bothered to file their income taxes going back, 5 years? That's going to get a lot worse. That's going to be the impact if either we shut down or we avoid a shutdown by allowing the Freedom Caucus to get their wish of defunding the IRS.
And, you know, again, this benefits the very well. And I say this all the time. The chaos that Republicans, levy on our government pays off dividends for the very well-to-do because they don't want government regulation. They don't want to pay taxes. They don't want oversight. They don't want any of the things that our government does. So a shutdown, chaos, you know, the kind of things we've seen the last several years plays right into their hands. And look, I look at, you know, you guys put out a piece the other day, Trump's only legislative accomplishment, it was that tax scam, tax heist that they did back in 2017, 2018. And billionaires got 77% richer. Now, you know, I'm talking to average everyday working people, and I'm going, why aren't we losing our minds over the fact that billionaires got 77% richer and we've all gotten poorer because inflation keeps going up and prices keep going up so we can feed this monster?
Well, I think one way of answering that is that people are getting angry about this. We know that if there's one thing people can agree on about our tax system right now, it's that big corporations and the very best off American individuals aren't paying enough, that these folks need to be the focus of increased of tax hikes if we do them. But there's another indicator that people are fed up with it, and it's a far more dangerous one, I think, which is that we're reaching sort of a crisis of legitimacy with our institutions. Nobody believes that our elected officials have their interests at heart. Nobody believes in the Supreme Court anymore, right? Like all of our important institutions, there's the baseline level of trust in these things has gone down. And I think that is that's the way this is sort of manifesting itself, this dislike people have for the way our policies are going.
Well, they recognize that these policies
aren't being enacted with their interest in mind.
Let me pose this as a question then, because, you know, I get this all the time. You're exactly right. I hear it from people all the time that, you know, the Supreme Court is bought and paid for. Congress is bought and paid for. Is this a both sidesism thing? Is this, you know, a Republican Party that is it all? Where do you put the blame?
Depends which institution you're talking about. With Congress, I mean, I think it's not heretical. It's not crazy to say that the root of all problems is money and the fact that we have a privately funded system of paying for elections, which means inherently that all our elected officials, whatever their party is, the basic incentive is there for them to listen first and foremost to the people who have the most money and whose interests are most clearly affected by their policy. That's rich people and corporations. The incentive for them to listen to the rest of us, as disorganized and moneyless as we are, it's just not there. Yeah. So I think that's, in that sense, it's bipartisan. Now, you talk about the Supreme Court. There, I think we're seeing a sea level change. Trust in the Supreme Court hasn't been an issue for a long time, since the Great Depression, in the way that it is right now. And it's because we are seeing a dramatic shift in the way the Supreme Court is making decisions and the sort of things it's taking on, whether it's Roe v. Wade or some of these more recent tax cases.
Yeah, you bring up the tax case. There's this Moore versus U.S. Case that's coming up, I guess, later this year. There's going to be, it's going to be heard by the Supreme Court. I've heard things all over the map on this. I want to get your take. What is it, and what if they decide, if the court decides the wrong way, what does it mean?
Right. Well, on its face, this isn't a big deal. There's a business owner from Washington State who got a $15,000 bill from the IRS because of the Trump tax law changes and didn't want to pay it. And so they took it to court, and here we are at the Supreme Court. Now, obviously, the fact that this got to the Supreme Court says that there's a lot more behind it. And in fact, what's behind it is this. The $15,000 bill that this person was mad about was from something called the transition tax, which was a one-time tax, one of the few revenue raisers, by the way, in the otherwise atrocious Trump tax cuts. This thing was designed to impose a one-time toll tax on the mountains of offshore cash that big multinationals had, right? If you remember back in 2017, the big problem was we knew that all these companies, Microsoft, Google, the tech and the pharma, all these guys were shifting their profits offshore on paper to avoid paying U.S. tax on them.
Right.
And so when we went to this territorial tax system in 2017, we gave up on the project forever of taxing this foreign income. But we decided we had to have some minimal level of tax on that old pre-2017 offshore income. And we're talking $2.5 trillion of untaxed income, most of which should have been in the U.S. So we did a one-time 15% tax. You know, it's a sweetheart deal. That was the transition tax. And so the $15,000 is the share of it that this one business owner had. But our new report shows that, in fact, there's a huge, huge, it's the tip of the iceberg. What we're really talking about here is up to $340 billion of tax revenue, of which a gigantic share was paid by just a few of the very biggest companies. We're talking, we identified 380 companies that disclosed paying some of this tax. Fully a third of it was paid by just five companies. Wow. That's $90 billion for Apple, Microsoft, Google, J&J, and Pfizer. Just those guys. Which means if this case goes bad, the simple way would be these guys get their $15,000 back. The next step would be, and it's an entirely possibility, is that the entire transition tax, not just their share, is ruled unconstitutional, which means Apple, Pfizer, Microsoft, J&J, and Facebook get their get their $90 billion back. That a $270 billion hole gets blown in the federal budget at a time when we can't afford it. There's an even bigger concern, believe it or not, which is forward thinking. If you think about the universe of tax reforms, progressive tax reforms that folks have been coalescing around that seem to have some promise for undoing the inequities in our tax code, number one on the list is a wealth tax. Elizabeth Warren's been talking it up. Bernie's been talking it up. We're seeing it now at the state level in a half a dozen states as a real possibility. That possibility goes away if this Moore case goes the wrong way. And the reason, I won't go into it forever, but the argument they're making is that you can't tax income at the federal level unless it's been realized. That is, unless you get a check. Otherwise, it doesn't count as income. That's not really a principle that's governed our tax system. And in fact, if the realization principle gets enforced, as the Moores, this family want to do, we'd be springing a dozen holes in every major tax levied at the federal level, which means, because states depends on the federal government, we'd have real problem with state governments as well. I said in a thing I wrote the other day that this might be the most fiscally consequential Supreme Court decision in U.S. history. And, you know, inflation adjusted, who knows, right? But they rolled the income tax unconstitutional 100 something years ago. But it would be huge. And again, at a time when we couldn't afford to lose even the $15,000, let alone the $350 billion we're talking about here.
Wow, that's enormous. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Matthew Gardner. He's a senior fellow at the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. If you want to check out their website, itep.org. Now, I mean, anything going in front of the Supreme Court right now, it's tainted with all kinds of billionaire money and allegations of, you know, lobbying and payoffs. Anything in this any inconveniences for our nine in the robes?
Well, there is for at least two of them. Roberts and Alito, it turns out, each have substantial stock holdings in companies that would benefit from a repeal of this transition tax to the tunes of billions of dollars. So, you know, their share of it wouldn't be gigantic, but it's as clear a conflict of interest as you'll ever see. I mean, if there was a Chief Justice Microsoft, it might be a little bit clearer, but you know, it's not at all hard to see the impropriety of this. And yeah, so this is coming at a time, as I said before, when the perceived legitimacy of the Supreme Court is at an all-time low. This flood of ethical lapses and scandals and just a complete lack of concern for public perception that we've seen from the court the last year or so, this could make it a lot worse. So even absent this, it's a case that could really blow a hole in our federal budget. But the notion that Supreme Court justices might be making such a decision in a way that benefits themselves personally, I think would be catastrophic for the legitimacy of the institution.
I agree. But, you know, a lot of what's been going on there has been just mind-boggling. You know, Alito and his bizarre defense in the newspaper, and you know, Thomas, all of the long line of payoffs that, wow, it's not good. It's not good. So when does this get heard? Is there a calendar date? Do we have an idea of when so we can start preparing?
Well, one thing we know about Supreme Court justices is that they do what they want when they want to. But the thought is that we'll have a decision before the end of the year, November maybe. Yeah. Right now, a lot of organizations, anti-tax organizations, are submitting their amicus briefs, you know, their friend of the court briefs, where they explain their rationale for why we shouldn't have a tax system anymore. But you know, they're going to be looking at that stuff over the next few weeks, and I think hearing it sometime starting in October. So we should know a lot of things by the end of the year.
Well, we'll see how that goes, and I expect you'll come back and share with us what happens at the hearing, and possibly if a decision and when a decision, what that's going to mean and all of that. But Matthew, I appreciate you taking a little time for us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Good stuff, Matthew Gardner. Make sure you check out their website, itep.org. He's a senior fellow there at the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. Gonna take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, I think about a friend who was a congressman years ago. And one of the things he told me, you know, look, no one's ever bought my vote. But I got to raise money. So you get my ear 15 minutes at a time. And he goes, look, the people who are writing the checks, they all have similar wants and needs. It's all well coordinated. And this is back, you know, this is back 15 years ago. It's gotten so much worse. And this is why I'm a supporter of publicly funded elections. I think you get X amount of dollars to run an election. If you can get, you know, people to come in and volunteer time, that's great. I'm in favor of, you know, small, you know, matching donations from individuals. We should be banning corporate money. We should be banning PACs and super PACs and all of that stuff. Because the big moneyed interests get what they want all the time. And this tax thing could be huge. I mean, you know, as Matthew was talking, my mind goes to, so let me get this straight. Because if you remember, you know, you had all these big companies hoarding money overseas, mostly in the Caymans or in Ireland or places that had no, they were tax havens. And you had this one-time repatriation fee. And, you know, they were saying, oh, look how much money we brought in. Now, this could potentially undo all of that. And do you think that they kind of knew that this is the direction that they were going to go? Because I don't believe the moneyed interests do anything haphazardly. I don't believe the right does anything without really gaming it out. This is the one thing I give them credit for. They built an incredibly powerful state policy network. They got think tanks in every state. They've got, you know, giant, capacity for intellectual damage. They have the ability to game out horrible stuff for working people, and they've been very successful. And this tax thing is still part of it. And I go back to what George Carlin said years and years ago. He said, look, you know, the rich, you know, take all the money, pay none of the taxes. The working class, the middle class pays all of the taxes, does all the work. And the poor are there to scare the middle class to showing up to the crummier and crummier jobs. There has never been a more succinct, accurate statement, in my view, than that one. And now they're going to destroy our ability to make investments, to take care of people. I mean, it's maddening when you stop and think about it, the direction we're going as a country because of the enormous wealth that's being accumulated. And it's only going to get worse. Trust me, this is only going to get worse as technology comes online, as we start losing more and more jobs. I was just reading an article that FedEx is looking at doing away with their dock workers because they've got AI who can load and unload the trucks. They've got robotics who can come in and do all the work that right now people are doing. And eventually there's going to be a point where working people have no work. And this is, I keep saying, you know, our politicians are so far behind the curve. And that's on purpose. Republicans have gummed the system up for so long. I mean, this is not new. You know, during the Obama years, how many times did we have, you know, near shutdowns and chaos? I mean, it was like a bad season of 24. You know, every time you turn around, there's a ticking bomb. You know, society's on the brink of being eviscerated by crazy Republicans who want to hold the country hostage for more cuts so that they could take food out of the mouths of children to give rich people tax breaks. That is the reality of the Republican Party. Literally stealing food out of the mouths of children so that we can give more tax breaks to the very wealthy. And this, This thing that the ITEP put out is just remarkable. 77% our billionaire class got richer because of the Trump tax scheme. How much wealthier did you get? Remember that tax cut that you were supposed to get? Did you get it? The answer is no. And because of the Trump tax scheme, our wealth class added another $2.2 trillion in wealth. And that's on top of the $3.9 trillion in wealth that they added because of the pandemic. You seeing a pattern here? You're getting robbed. You're getting ripped off every day. And then we're being told the people who are trying to fight back, those workers who are on strike, those Teamsters who are going to go on strike, the restaurant workers in Las Vegas who are about to go on strike, they're the problem. They're not the problem. They're the solution. And again, I go back to what Sean Fain said where I started today. I go back to that comment that he made of, look, we've got to take on corporate greed. He said, we're fed up with corporate greed. We're fed up with corporate excess. We're fed up with breaking our bodies for companies that take more and more and give less and less. Our anger is righteous. Our struggle is just. He's spot on accurate. And we had better wake up to that soon, because technology is coming fast. This is coming. There's no, hey, it's coming. And we're behind. So all of this chaos, all of these shutdowns, all of the impeachment inquiry, all this craziness is nothing more than stall tactics for us to get ahead of the curve. Because once we're behind, we never catch up. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, California Senator Dianne Feinstein passed today. And, now it puts Gavin Newsom in an interesting spot. Who does he appoint? Which direction does he go? Because there's a primary challenge going on. There are a bunch of Democrats running to fill her seat. We'll see what takes us. Anyway, we're here to share some thoughts on maybe Bob's got some stories about Senator Feinstein. That's why I've asked my good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick.
So, did you know the senator?
Yes. Served with her in the sense that she was in the Senate, I was in the House, but she was there a long time, as Senator Biden was, and McConnell. But I wasn't a social dinner guest, but I talked to her through on occasion. I think the really neat thing about Senator Feinstein was the fact that she was the first female chair of two big committees, which is Intel. And also chair of rules. And the Intel is the one I'd stress too, because where I think internally, at least in the Senate, she had the most respect was the fact that she wasn't known to tinker politically with Intel. If you're on the Intel committee and people start to perceive, they've got some political agenda or something, then it causes a lot of constraint, anger each side. But I think Feinstein did a good job on chairing it. It's sad how, how things are. It's sad how she's remembered how she left, but she should be remembered for a lot of things that she did.
Yeah. What do you think, which direction do you think Newsom goes?
Well, he put himself into a box in the sense of, the quote that he was going to, he committed that he was going to appoint an African-American woman. Now, that's not a box where you say, why are you saying that? But also that appointment would be a card holder, a placeholder. And that's a problem because Then he has to find somebody who says publicly, yes, I'm not running, you know. In one way, though, it solves a problem for him because he doesn't have to go in between several primary
right.
candidates. So he has to go outside the people in the primary, I would assume.
Well, we'll see where that goes because, you know, the race between Schiff and Porter, I'm told, is very close.
Yes, I think so.
I'm pulling for Katie Porter, but, I like Adam Schiff, but I'm pulling for Katie Porter. I got to get your thoughts on RFK Jr. launching an independent bid. Does this hurt more? Does this hurt Biden or Trump more?
I think it hurts Biden more. I do. Not that RFK is a player within the Democratic circles. We all know that. In fact, it's kind of funny, Rick. You have friends who they don't follow politics, but they follow names or whatever. And when this first started, I had friends of mine that said, oh, RFK is going to be, wow, you know, this is going to be a very divisive primary with Biden. And I'm like, no.
No.
They said, why not? I said, because RFK.
Because he's a kook.
Yeah, I'm going to be politer. RFK is different. And he has attacked me. He's got a conspiracy. I'm part of one of his conspiracy theories.
Oh, do tell.
If you Google. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. I was shopping one night. And what's the guy that did the Shawshank Redemption? Tim Robbins.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm shopping one night in a store in Ohio, and I get this phone call, and my friend's like in this panic. Tim Robbins is on TV attacking you. I think it was the Bill Maher show. He's attacking you. I'm like, okay. I'm out of office by this time. In fact, I'm doing your show, you know, at that time. And I said, for what? And he said, conspiracy theory, you rigged the Bush election. I said, if I rigged the Bush election, there's two things. One, I wouldn't have went into the Bush housing program known as prison. Or two, I would have really a wonderful Swiss bank account, of which I have neither of those. RFK came up with a theory that I had gotten Diebold, and through the Help America Vote Act, he put aside, you know, Steny Hoyer is, and Ted Kennedy, his uncle, was sponsors of the bill. He put that aside. Yeah, he came up with a whole conspiracy theory that I had fixed the election for Bush in 2004.
Wow. Yeah, it's easy. It's easy to put Teddy Kennedy away.
But I think that if anything. This election, if it's Trump and Biden, then it becomes so tight that, look, anybody can make a difference. But then again, there are people that can make the difference against Trump, too, you know.
Yeah, because I'm not sure how RFK breaks. I'll be honest with you. He's on all the kook side of things that would some people on the right would be attracted to.
Well, that's true.
Yes, I wanted to get your thought because my mind is in this weird spot because he's really on the kook train that could attract some of those people who just don't like the Trump stuff.
True.
But, yeah, we'll see.
Thought about that. You're right. He could attract a little bit from maybe each side. I don't think he's a kingmaker.
No.
As if Manchin were in this or something. But yes, he can do a little damage here and a little damage there.
Wanted to get your thoughts on the impeachment. It was quite nothing. I mean, when your three witnesses say, "Well, there's nothing," kind of makes you go, "Anything?"
Well, yeah, this is one I kind of called wrong in the sense, and it'll develop. You know, the American public are fluid, but when this all started, I had messaged a couple of people I know on the Republican side in D.C. in the House, and I just said, "This is." Because they said, what do you think? I said, dumb political move, dumb. You're going to take yourselves off target. You don't know what you've got yet to, you know, launch this. And then I read releases of the moderate Republicans, which were, I must say, pretty well done, walking in between, you know, saying we don't know what's going to happen. It's simply an inquiry, you know, trying to downplay it. And then I saw some of the polling, which was, again, I want to stress this can change, but I saw some of the polling that people were like, yeah, okay, yeah, it's okay to inquire. Great percentage of people. Now, that doesn't mean, though, that because this first hearing happened, that those same people that said it's okay to inquire doesn't mean they won't change their mind and say, okay, you inquired, now what?
Yeah.
There is nothing. So, yeah, I don't think this was the firecracker start, obviously, to anything.
No, and I mean, they use doctored text messages. You got, you know, Nancy Mace, you know, saying that we know he did it. And you go, okay, prove it. And now she's got, you know, she did a bizarre video. I don't know if you saw this, but she did one of those walking bizarre videos where evidently Joe Biden's in a prostitution ring. Somehow he's involved in a prostitution ring. I'm going, for a guy who's always sleeping, he sure gets a lot done.
You know, in D.C., if you listen to the conspiracy theories, I don't think anybody in D.C. in the Capitol would be working. They'd all be on, you know, I don't know, some island or some room somewhere. I mean,
yeah, all orgies.
Yeah, exactly.
But I did want to ask you about something, because you brought up about the Swiss bank account. You know, someone told me the other day, and again, I get this all the time, and we have this conversation every once in a while, about the lavish pensions and the lavish health care and all the stuff that members of Congress get. How long do you have to be in Congress to get a pension?
Well, you vest in 5 years. And let me answer the health care question. 6 years ago, December, I think it was the 30th, it'll be 7 years coming up, I had a heart attack.
Yep.
That heart attack cost me $66,000. Because I didn't have health care. So I'm going to be a walking testament to the fact that health care is not automatic. You have to be in the system. You have to have, you know, bought it. You have to have a plan. I was 3 months short, unfortunately, of you know, Medicare. Now, the whole deal about you get your salary, you know, serve one term, you get your salary, your kids get this, your kids get that. Now, if you pass away in office, yes, your family will get the remainder of your term, will get the salary payment, and then you carry, you know, insurance policies yourself. You need 5 years to vest, but you have to put into the system. And when people say, well, you know, it's lavish. Now, in the good old days, years back, and somebody served 25 years, yes, you know, they could come out with a fairly healthy pension. But now you put in to the pension. And if you've served, say, 10 years, and you, based on your salary, and you put something in the pension, your payment out would be about, if you didn't take it early, $2,200 a month would be about what it would be if you put in a decade. Now, if you put in Strom Thurmond years, you know, and yeah, those pensions are going to be higher. In fact, if they would retire, they probably would get more, you know, in the long run. So it depends on how many years you have in, but the idea that you retire and you get your salary, that is absolutely not true.
Yeah, there's so much out there that's just crazy. But now I got to get your thoughts on the shutdown. Evidently, it's coming. I still don't know why we're in this mess, but any thoughts?
Sure. We're in this mess because there are 20 people. I think 8 could be, you know, gotten to, in the sense of cooperating with the speaker. But there are basically 20 people, 12 hardcore, and of course the ringleader, Matt Gaetz, who wants to do other things in his life, and, you know, he'll utilize this. But I think this core group of 12 to 14, 15 people are people who, at the end of the day, they don't care if the Republicans have the majority in Congress. They care either about themselves or they want to be in the minority because you don't have to govern.
Yeah.
You can just go crazy and complain all day and make up conspiracy theories. You don't have to govern. And if you look back at the Gingrich Clinton years, because I was part, you know, of that shutdown at that particular time, and Clinton did a veto, and Clinton blinked a little bit, and we blinked a little bit, and we had, you know, balanced budgets. But this is not that scenario. This has nothing to do with Joe Biden. Zero. Has nothing to do with the Senate. This is all Republican, internal war, and it's a circular firing squad that McCarthy has zero control over. And eventually, they're going to move to vacate his seat. And at some point in time, McCarthy is going to have to govern. And by governing, you got to reach out to the other side, yep, throw out a bill. If half the Republicans like it, okay. If half the Democrats like it, okay. Otherwise, this is going to be a dysfunctional speakership from here all the way through. And of course, Rick, and I'll end this rant by saying this. If they keep it up, the Democratic side has to just sit, have a mantra about working people and yep. the economy, et cetera, and they will take the House back.
No, no, this is what I've been saying. Don't do anything to save them.
Don't do anything.
Give them just enough rope to hang themselves.
Well, and if they do save them, they're still going to vacate the seat and then go after him with the vengeance. McCarthy can't win. Oh, he'll probably get something temporarily, maybe, you know, for a few days, and then he'll pass all these outrageous bills, which I love doing, you know, the appropriations as you're supposed to, but they're going to be outrageous appropriation bills. And then
yeah.
you've got one choice, up or down, because the Senate is not going to go along with it, probably including Republicans.
So last question, do we shut down tomorrow?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. There was no doubt in that.
Oh, yeah. Well, if as we speak, if they tonight at midnight, if they craft something, I don't think they can technically get it done into form. Plus, somebody will object to suspending the the reading or the rule, and that's where they got a problem. So they'll technically shut down. Now, if he can get a three-day extension, then the extension starts Sunday. Nobody really is affected, but it will be a technical shutdown.
Oh boy. Again, as I've been saying, this is no way to run a lemonade stand. But, Bob,
I
appreciate
it. This may go on a while.
What's that?
This may go on a while. Remember, it took 15 votes to get him in there.
Always McCarthy. The eternal yeah. optimist. I appreciate the time, and I hope you have a wonderful time in Kashmir. Good for you, and I look forward to hearing
Kashmir
from you when you get
back. Okay.
Thanks so much, our good friend Bob Nay. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1931. Canadian coal miners, their wives, and children marched through the streets of Estevan, Saskatchewan. The miners were on strike for union recognition and better pay and working conditions. Safety was a major concern for the 600 men and boys who worked in the mines. Water collected in many work areas. Too often, the mine companies failed to replace rotting timber, so roof cave-ins were frequent. Inadequate ventilation led to high concentrations of carbon dioxide. For braving this dangerous underground work, the miners earned only 25 cents for each ton of coal. The miners had joined the Mine Workers Union of Canada earlier that year. They called a strike in September, but coal mine operators refused to meet their demands. Miners and their families decided to demonstrate in the town of Estevan to gain community support. The mayor banned the demonstration and called upon the Royal Canadian Mounted Police to crush the march. The Mounties met several hundred miners and their families and attempted to block the procession. They opened fire on the unarmed crowd. Three striking miners were killed, and many others were wounded and arrested. Finally, on October 6th, the mine owners finally agreed to an 8-hour workday and a minimum wage of $4 a day. But they refused to recognize the union. It was not until the end of World War II that the United Mine Workers finally won recognition in the Saskatchewan coal fields. The strike remains a controversial event in Estevan. The three miners who were killed have the inscription "Murdered by RCMP" on their headstones. Over the years, locals have alternately erased and restored these inscriptions. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. Let's quick go to the phones. We've got Steve in Chicago on line one. Steve, how are you, buddy? It helps when he's on air.
JFK is basically a crazy person who comes from political royalty in this country. You know, if his name's not Kennedy, nobody gives a damn what he thinks. But, you know, we give a great deal of deference to that family. I mean, there's an entire generation that's in love with them, a couple of generations, I would argue. So it is possible that somebody in America, you know, because of their love of the Kennedys, says that, you know, I'm going to cast a vote for Kennedy, not knowing just how crazy he is. So, yeah, I don't know whether that breaks for Joe Biden or for Trump. Who could say at this point? Because, you know, he said some things that that might appeal to certain people on the left, and then also others on the right, you know. So, again, don't know where we stand with him. He's a wild card. I do know that given the likelihood of the small margins in certain swing states, you know, a third-party candidate could make a difference. Who's to say? That's the only concern I think a lot of us have with regard to someone like RFK. And then also, in terms of the shutdown, your guest pretty much nailed it. Yes, you know, McCarthy made a deal with the devil in order to get elected speaker on the 15th ballot. Let's not forget all the drama that transpired. You know, he and Matt Gaetz going back and forth, Marjorie Taylor Greene on the phone with Donald Trump, supposedly. All of this back and forth. And, okay, so he finally gets in, except this is a house that's built out of straw. Anything can tear it down. And these people came for their pound of flesh that they were promised by McCarthy, and now they want, you know, to exercise some kind of power. They realize that they have a disproportionate amount of power, these 20-odd people, as compared to anybody else in Congress, and they want to exercise that power. I think your guest is right. Most of them want just to move on to some crazy position in post their careers in the Congress in some conservative capacity. Who knows? A gig at Fox, or, you know, who knows, some other outlet, you know, some YouTube gig, who knows? But they just don't care. They have no sense of responsibility to the country and what this can do. A shutdown of the United States government affects the international economy, not just ours, and it's never come out well for the party that forced the shutdown. Every time that this has happened, you know, and Republicans have pushed us to this. Democrats don't do this. Democrats don't threaten to shut down the government and act like children. You know, and there's a question as to whether or not even it's even legal, but we'll set that aside for a moment. And you've got these people who are behaving like children who were threatening to shut down the government. And after the shutdown, guess what? When it happened during Bill Clinton's administration, it benefited Bill Clinton. I don't know what they think they're going to get out of it, because they're not going to benefit their party. And, of course, Kevin McCarthy is torn, because he feels as if he doesn't give them what they want, he won't be speaker next week. If he does give them what they want, we're not going to get a deal. Government is going to shut down. And, of course, what then is your legacy other than, you know, you go down in history as one of the worst speakers that we've ever had? So where can he turn?
No, you're spot on. And, look, I wish this for him. I wished heartburn and acid reflux, and I wished, you know, the crazy on him, because it's what he wanted. And he's getting every bit of it.
Yeah, there are certain jobs that you just shouldn't want. I don't know what sane person would want to be Speaker of the House in this environment. But he wanted it, as you said, and now he has it. And last point, you know, I don't make so much of what is going to happen with regard to Dianne Feinstein's seat. Yeah, only in that, you know, whoever is picked, I mean, you know, we're already in the fall. You know, by early 2024, yeah, nothing is going to get done much in the Senate. You know, I mean, let's face it, we're into election season. People are worried about getting reelected. So there isn't much public policy that's going to get done anyway. So whoever he picks, I don't think they'll make much of a difference. They'll go down as a footnote in the history book, but it's not as if they're going to play a major role. So it's important in California politics and who's going to hold that position in terms of the election that's coming up for that position. But, you know, their capacity to impact any public policy coming up, minimal.
Yeah, I'm with you. Steve, I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll see where it all goes. And look, I don't want there to be a shutdown. There's nothing good in this other than, you know, as Steve pointed out, you know, never goes well for the people who do it. So maybe, you know, maybe Bob's right. Maybe Republicans want to be in the minority. Maybe there's some of them that want to be in the minority so that, well, they can just cause trouble. It's so much easier being in the minority. It's so much easier to be a bomb thrower than actually having an agenda and a policy position. We'll see. I got to finish with, and again, I am now going to say the words Taylor and Swift back to back for the again another time, because Fox News now. Fox News evidently upset that during the football game that Taylor Swift went to watch her boyfriend play with his boyfriend's mother, with her boyfriend, his boy, with the boyfriend's mother. She evidently, you could see the lips move, and she used the F word, evidently. And Fox News, well, Fox News had a commentary for it. And, well, yeah, here's Fox News.
Here you have Taylor Swift, probably just met Travis Kelce's mom for the first time. They're at the game last week, and she's going, let's effing go, front of her.
But Travis Kelce said that everybody in the booth that she was sitting in, all her, his family, everybody said that she was so lovely.
Lovely. Until, I'm sorry, if I heard that, and my son was dating a girl who has a mouth like a Teamster, that's it. Either way, this couple is already more annoying.
No offense to the Teamsters.
I'm not going to go where what I think of that as an actual Teamster. I'm not going to go where my mind originally went. But what is this fascination with these two? Now, again, I've been enjoying watching the incel crowd attack Travis Kelce, you know, trying to make him a beta, which is their word for some. I don't even know the words, to be honest, but try to make him, you know, less than manly. He's dating Taylor Swift. The two of them are like the power. I guess this is the power couple now. And when they break up, I'm sure she'll write a song about him, and it'll be number one. And I'm sure he'll sell more merchandise. I don't get this fascination. I don't get it. I know he advocated for, you know, the COVID vaccine. I know that he did a spot for Bud Light. I get it. I know she registered voters. You know, what is it that the right has that would keep this at the front of their minds? Now, understand, this is what they discussed as there's an impeachment inquiry and a government shutdown. This is breaking news in the F world. And not just because she said the F word. Well, I guess it was partially. Wow. Help us. Help us turn off the F channel and turn on the Rick Smith Show. Grab our podcast wherever you find your podcasts. Grab ours. Share it, especially with people who do watch the F channel. Need a little truth, reality, a little common sense. And maybe I'll say the words Travis, Taylor, and Swift again someday down the road, I'm sure. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.